The department is coming to report on the second quarter of their budget. Before the department starts presenting, let me just make some few comments which I would like them to touch on their presentation. But before that, I'm sure we know each and every one of us. Is there anybody who is new, who doesn't know who is here? Honorable members, do you know all these people from the department? They are the managers. Members of the department, do you know all the members of this committee? Gigi? Part of the furniture. So this is all part of the furniture. In your presentation, really, would like you to also tell, to also be aware that you are concerned if information comes late, because we've got to process it, and members have got to go through it so that they're able to actually be well informed, so that they get active during the time of the presentation. And in your presentation of the quarterly report, really would like to have, at least in the first line, the idea of what happened in the first quarter, so that we don't say what actually happened in the first quarter. And your second quarter is actually telling us of what is it now, and we are not aware how far you went with the first quarter, because there are quite a number of objectives which are not achieved in the first quarter. So we would really like to know about that. And also, of major importance and concern is the way the budget is spent. For instance, in program three, 63% has already been spent. And in program four, only 18% has been spent. So there's a skewed sort of type of spending, and we are really concerned about that. Then delays in the implementation. The department has got delay here, delay there, delay there, and delay there. So I wonder how you are going to inform us what the delays are about, and how you are going to curb the issue of delays. And then the full-time equivalence. For the first quarter, you've only achieved 255, whereas your final objective is over 3,000. And then keep shifting the deadlines. And then this is how far are the deadlines going to be shifted? By the end of the financial year, will you have shifted but having obtained what you wanted to obtain? And then the internal delays. Can you deal with the internal delays so that you are able to deal with your budget? Your budget is not so much. The little that you have, it must be spent properly and be dealt with. Thank you. Gigi and your team. Oh, sorry. Are there any apologies?
yes, Chairperson. We've got apologies from Mom Adams. She will not be here, Chairperson. We've also received an apology from the Minister and the Deputy Minister as well, Chairperson. So those are the apologies that we have, Chair.
I signed a sick leave for Honorable Bewa. He had a doctor's certificate. Gigi, you've got an hour to present.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We will try and attend to some of the matters that the Chairperson raised in the...
As you present.
Honorable Chairperson, we, given the time limitations, we will not go into matters that are not directly pertinent to the report itself. and go straight into the report. We have, Honorable Chairperson, overall 70% achievement of our targets over this particular quarter. And in the same period, we had significant work done for about 12.5% of the targets, and we had 17.5% targets that were not achieved. We will speak to all these per program, and the DDGs will come in. We do have an apology, however, from the acting COO, and the unfortunate thing was that she had a bit of a family crisis last night, which she could not then join us today. So I will deal with matters pertaining to Program 1, and the DDGs will come in on the line function. Overall, Honorable Chairperson, it is important to state up front that the assurance that I've got from the DDGs is that we will, by the end of the financial year, be able to achieve the targets across the various programs, with the exception, Honorable Chairperson, of the FTEs. And the reason for that is largely the matters that we discussed in the committee last time when we were discussing the EPWP turnaround strategy. And we do require that turnaround to take place for us to be able to achieve and even exceed in the coming years. So obviously the part of the infrastructure projects that we are busy trying to get back on track were included in some of the targets that we had actually put, and hoping that we were going to be able to deal with these things as frequently as possible, and it proved not to be that easy. So that is something we would like to declare up front. So you would find we might still be even as close to 90% of targets achieved by the end of the financial year, but the FTEs will not be achieved as originally targeted. The DDG will speak a little bit more about that. Service delivery information. Honorable Chairperson, we had during the second quarter, we had two appeals lodged with the tourist guide registrar. Both of them were from applicants to become tourist guides. We wanted to register as tourist guides. Both of them were from the Western Cape. The decisions of the provincial tourist guides registrar were upheld by the National Tourist Guides Registrar. Typically, the kind of queries that appeals that are lodged would be people that do not have complete documentation, and in some of these instances, we're talking about non-nationals who previously might have been in the register because they had a work permit, and when they don't have that work permit, would think it ordinarily should just be that because they were in the register, they should still continue to be in the register. So those are some of the kind of queries that actually come through. Others pertain to people that might have had some form of a training, and that training happens not to be the accredited training that is recognized by CATSITA, or the kind of training that would have actually come from a higher education institute in terms of the Act. So those are the kind of things that they normally would be dealing with. We continue to provide our services, Honorable Chairperson, with regards to the NTIGs, and I think the DDG, PKS, Policy and Knowledge Services would expand a little bit in terms of the work that we actually do in all these tourism information gateways, which for now we've got two, and going forward we intend to have three with the addition of Cape Town. The current two is Oa Tambo, and then we've got King Shaka as well. In terms of the complaints, we have handled them in accordance with the current procedures. But this is an area where we are also, Chairperson, developing a broader framework which would allow for the harmonization of these processes. What form do you complete to be able to lodge your complaint? Where do we register this complaint? How do we make sure that the public has got track of what is coming through and so on without giving details of individuals and so on? So that's why we've got about 12 complaints from South Africans. We don't have complaints from international tourists in this period, which is a very good indicator. One of those was withdrawn. I don't have full details of that withdrawal, but most of the ones that get withdrawn, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, are those that either they were able to resolve between the complainant and the establishment prior to any other intervention that would have come through. 11 of those are still in progress, and we're just indicating also here the types of these kind of complaints, where we've got complaints pertaining to levels of services and things like robbery and so on, theft, those kind of things. And this then are referred to the relevant authorities that actually deal with this. People are asking for refunds and so on, who would actually question the level of service that they were supposed to get and so on. So that would also go to the Consumer Commission, and misleading adverts, which would then go to the Advertising Standards Authorities to be able to deal with that. In terms of the different provinces and where these things are and so on, Gauteng with 3, it's Western Cape with 6, Mpumalanga and KZN, and then Eastern Cape, all those with 1. What one could deduce from this also is that where there's a concentration of visitors and a concentration of product, that seems to be the place where there's mainly queries that would also come through, which would then make sense that there will be less complaints where there's less visitors and so on. Program 1, Chairperson, suffice to say that the bulk of what we have planned to do here, we have done. Really, I will not go through each of the details. I will flag some issues. Issues about making sure that we have tabled our annual report in time. By now, we have already even presented that. The plans that are supposed to be submitted to the Department of Performance Monitoring, Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation, which we have already done, and the next submission is 30th of November, which also we are ready to actually do that. We have a vacancy rate of 6.8% against our target of 8% against, which is a stretched target. The overall target for government is about 10%. And in this area, Honourable Chairperson, it is important to indicate that we could have been even at 5% or so by now. But we are treading very carefully in that as we are going through the preparation for the next MTF and getting indications of what kind of resources we will have, we do not want to find ourselves in a situation where we would have employed people, and after employing those people, then we don't necessarily have enough resources to be able to adequately provide for them. So we are trying to play a little bit of a balancing act there. But also, as we have indicated previously, this is an area where we are also mindful that we are going through a restructuring process. So that restructuring process will inform some of the decisions in terms of which positions might change altogether. We are at 50% women, And now we are at 80% women at top management, with a confirmation of the DDG Corporate Affairs, who will start in January next year, who is also a woman. So that's where we are at. There's no more vacancies at that level. So that's the state of affairs as we speak. People with disability, we are at 4.9%. We didn't want to round it off. So that's where we are at, and we do believe that we would most likely be much higher than this by the time we finish with the restructuring process as well. We, in terms of the various cases that we've got, cases of misconduct, it's different cases, Honorable Chairperson. None of this actually relates to the EPWP ones that we reported last time. Those are already done and concluded. These are new cases where some of those cases would relate to, we've got people charged with issues of forgery or those kind of things. But these are fairly junior people. We've got people charged with not properly declaring things and so on. But still, it's at a lower level. So it's quite different cases. We had a case, a dismissal case, of somebody who has absconded beyond the legal limit. So there's a certain number of days that if a person has not been seen or heard of, is deemed having dismissed themselves. Ours was simply to just facilitate the process that dismissal is formalized. So that has been done and is concluded. With a case related to intimidation and so on, which now has been concluded as well, and there were sanctions and suspensions without pay for up to 3 months and so on. So these are the different types of cases. We maintain strict discipline within the organization to make sure that we are not affected in terms of functionality by conduct and so on and so forth. Suffice to say that we had submitted the financial statements in time and so on, so that all is history, clean audit and everything, all that has now come to pass. This is a new year, which we must continue to maintain what we had actually been able to achieve in the previous year. On slide 21, we, in terms of our communications strategy, we do a lot of work here, Honorable Chairperson, and I think it has to be shared with the members so that they have a sense of what is contained therein. But we are doing a lot of work here in terms of outreach, in terms of creating awareness about the opportunities that exist in the department, and so on and so forth. But when it's reported for what has been targeted, it doesn't show all that. And I think it is important that at least we're able to demonstrate so that you're able to see what are these things that are done. Whether it's in these or that are done by the minister and the deputy minister with the communities, which I must say are quite useful in terms of having a better appreciation and an understanding of the needs on the ground, be they from business, but also from the communities. And it is something that we'll continue to do, and it's an area that we'll have to scale up as we go to the next financial year as well. It's resource intense, but in the end, it really is worth, and it is an important aspect of government going to the people as well. We have the work that we're doing with regards to the review of the legislation. I would try and deal with all the matters pertaining to either legislation or regulation in talking to this line. In this current year, we have some work that we are doing in terms of adjusting elements of the Tourism Act, which relate to, in the main, the governance of the public entities. And I'm using public entities because the Act provides for the Grading Council as a body on its own, even though administratively it's housed elsewhere. So we are doing some work. It's not too detailed policy work, if I could put it that way. So it's really to make sure that there's much more clarity in terms of the governance arrangements for those institutions. And that work is now ready for us to start getting into other consultative processes and so on. So that is work that we will be able to conclude within this year. But apart from that, there's work that we are doing which relates to the broader policy review of the environment within which we operate. And that would lead to, in the coming year, a much more comprehensive review of the legislation, which would then bring in these new issues that are emerging. So all these policies that are necessary, whether it is with regards to the issues around emerging technologies, sharing economy, and all those things, we'll then have to deal with that in that particular round, because that would require a lot more interaction with industry, with South Africans, and also here, the views of the consumers and so on. So that part we'll be able to deal with. The second part is that after we have gone through all the processes with regards to the tourist guides regulations, we are now ready also to actually have those formalized. We are also doing work in terms of the National Tourism Information Management System, and we are at a point now where we are ready also to solicit public comments with regards to that piece of regulation. And then the last one is the framework for lodgement of complaints with regards to the Office of the Tourism Complaints Officer. That would also come in terms of, we are ready as well on that one to be able to then go to the public for comments and so on. So, Honourable Chairperson, I'm mindful that regulations in the main would then be the domain of the executive, but we would like to have an opportunity to take the committee through these particular pieces, so that at least you are aware of what are these things that we're talking about. And so we might run that concurrently with the public comments period so that we are able to have sufficient time, because we would like to actually do 60 days instead of 30 days in all of them. And if we are able to do that, then we would be in a position to be also sure of the views that you might have with regards to the implementation of the mandate that you have given us. In terms of what the Act said, this is what we cannot do with regards to these particular issues. We do continue, Honourable Chairperson, to procure from establishments and businesses and so on, enterprises that are BE compliant in pursuit of the empowerment issues. That will be the end of Program 1, and I will hand over to DDG Chetty to deal with Program 2.
Sorry, before DDG Chetty starts, I would like really Program 4 to come at the end, Honourable Members, if you don't mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm going to follow the DG's lead and talk to those specific areas where we had challenges in quarter one, and update on where we are, and not spend too much time on those where we're on track. So the first slide is really talking to the National Tourism Stakeholder Forum and the National Tourism Management Information System. We're on track with both of those targets, and we will be publishing the NTIMS, as the DG has said, for public comments in the next quarter. If we could move to the next slide. With regards to the Charter Council...
Next quarter, she's referring to this quarter.
Yes.
Because she's talking about quarter two.
Yes. Thank you, DG. With regards to the work around broad-based black economic empowerment, the Charter Council has been appointed, and of course they've been given the mandate to develop the plan around transformation. We had a challenge around the baseline study in the last quarter. I'm pleased to report that we have actually made up time on that and caught up with what we were meant to do in quarter one, and we are on track with quarter two with regards to the baseline study. So the work has begun and the research is currently underway. This information will actually inform the work that the Charter Council puts into place around transformation. And the work on the tourism portal is actually also on track. The next slide talks to the work that we are doing with Tourist Guide. There are three projects in this area. One that is dealing with tourist guiding at World Heritage Sites, another program that is dealing with new entrants, and a third program that actually deals with continuous professional development guides. We were similarly in the last quarter behind targets on the program at World Heritage Sites. Again, I'm pleased to report that we have in fact now caught up with quarter one targets, and we have also met quarter two targets. Currently, there are 72 guides that are participating in a training program, 22 of these guides in the Cradle of Humankind. 13 of that 22 are actually being trained from NQF2 to NQF4, and 9 of those are actually new entrants into the guiding profession. So NQF2 in the guiding language is actually training for a specific site, and therefore you're only allowed to provide guiding at that specific site. Taking these guides to NQF4 means that they now actually are trained to guide within the province. So it means that it is multi-skilling them and allowing them to provide guiding on a much broader area than just that World Heritage Site. Similarly, there are 50 guides being trained at Isimangaliso. 10, again, are being taken from site training to being provincial guides, and 40 are on a very special in-house training program within Isimangaliso that helps them to tell the story of interpretation for that specific site. With regards to the new entrants, we actually have selected and put on training 20 guides. This is also in the KZF region. And then the continuous professional development isn't actually a training program per se. What it is actually talking to the issue of how you professionalize guiding and deal with continuous professional development of guides within the sector. So currently, there isn't necessarily a clear framework for how that is done and for how you continuously skill, and that is what this program is actually working on at this point. We're on track with actually the framework itself and development of a framework for continuous professional development. The next slide actually talks to our destination enhancement projects, and these relate to the Shinkoni Gate in Kruger National Park, as well as the Palaboa Hub, which is also in the Kruger National Park, and the National Heritage Monument Park and Interpretation Center. These are largely infrastructure-related projects, and they are quite intense in terms of the approval processes that we need to get, both from a planning perspective as well as from an environmental impact assessment perspective. I'm pleased to say that those projects are all on track. We have now got the relevant approvals to continue with the construction, and we have, in fact, had a very good meeting just this week with our colleagues at Sand Park. They are well into the process of actually their procurement process for getting the contractors on board. So construction of all these projects will begin and is on track for delivery as we had scheduled. Okay. The master plan is also on track. I think it's the next slide, please, Petra. With regards to the incentive program, there we, as you are aware, honourable members, we run three programs at present: the market access, the tourism grading, and the energy efficiency program. And those programs are actually now well established, and we have no challenges with the delivery of those specific programs. The universal accessibility program is similarly on track. The State of Turingen report in the last quarter, we actually reported that we have developed a framework for this. We had some challenges around actually the procurement process for the State of Tourism reporting. Usually this was something that was done in-house. We've decided to actually reorient it so that it becomes a report that is unique and not just simply a collation of information that exists elsewhere. So that means that we have required our own primary research to be completed, which was not as we have actually done it in the previous years. We are actually now have finalized the procurement. We are going to meet with the service provider in the next 2 weeks to actually begin work on this. Even though this, we haven't met the specific target of collecting the data in this quarter, we are confident that we will meet the annual target of having the report actually on track. It will affect, though, our quarter three deliverable, but our annual target is well on track. The mobile apps, there are two of them that we're developing, one for tourist guides and then one for our BICs. In the last quarter, we were behind schedule on this target. We are similarly behind schedule on the target in this quarter, but we have actually made the appointment of the service provider. We have met with the service provider and briefed them on what is required, and we have in fact agreed with them that it is possible to have the fully functional app in place for testing by mid-December. So we have actually compressed the design and the implementation from 3 months to 6 weeks without actually compromising the quality or the scope of what we will have delivered. The importance of these apps is that it actually is a platform that will reach a very large number of people very quickly. And so its value will be, down the line, quite immense. With regards to the two national tourism information gateways, we have fully operational gateways, of course, at OR Tambo and the Kinshasa International Airport. I'm also pleased to report, because in our discussions at the last quarter one discussion, the question was asked about Cape Town International. So we are actually in our negotiations with the team in Cape Town, and we should actually have progressed quite significantly with the partnership for the VIC at Cape Town International Airport with our team in Cape Town by the kind of January or February next year. So those negotiations are at an advanced stage.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable
members. Your TAF program. Your TAF program. Program. Yeah.
Okay. Just to introduce this program, Honourable Chairperson, this is the program that at the end of last year had 25% targets achieved, and 75% of its targets were in the yellow zone. This time around, those numbers have swapped places, so we are a bit comfortable about that. We still want a little bit more than just 75, but 75% of this program now is green, and 25% is yellow, and that yellow should become greener as we go. Thank you.
Thanks, DG, for the introduction. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, just to mention that by the end of this quarter, as Honourable Chair indicated in the beginning, the program spent 53% of its funds, and the biggest part of the spend, or the major reason for it to be a bit more than the 50%, is because of our membership fees to the UNWTO and RITORSA that we have paid in the first part of the year. Moving on to our plans and our deliverables, the first KPA, Honourable Chair, refers to skills development opportunities that we facilitate. Most of them we do through our bilateral relations that we have with countries. The first one refers to a cross-border guiding module that we are finalizing with Namibia, with the purpose of upskilling guides that do cross-border guiding between the two countries. That module, Honourable Members, was finalized but not consulted with our Namibian counterparts in the period under review. And the reason for that was we wanted to make sure that we have all our Namibian stakeholders in the same meeting, and that unfortunately we could only be able to do on the 19th of October. So although it wasn't done in the quarter under review, we have done it. What we are doing now is to finalize consultation with our South African stakeholders, and we are confident that this program this target will be met by the end of the financial year. The second and the third target skills programs refer to our language training, the one to Russian training for tourist guides, and the other one for Mandarin training for tourist guides and frontline staff. Just to mention, Honourable Members, that in our original plan, the training in Mandarin was scheduled to happen in the next financial year. But we have decided to reprioritize the training, and we moved it to the current financial year, which meant that quarter one for the Russian training did not go according to plan, because we also included the Mandarin training. But I'm happy to report that by the end of quarter two, the training in Mandarin as well as Russian has commenced, and in quarter three it will be completed. So that program is also well on track. Then we are working with the placement, or we are aiming to place 12 learner chefs in Seychelles for further training and capacity building. And we had to finalize our service level agreement with our counterparts in Seychelles, which we did in the quarter under review. Then we are looking at a benchmarking project where we look at the capacity building programs of other countries for provinces and municipalities. We want to benchmark how other countries do assist from a national level with capacity building for provincial and municipalities, and that project is on track. Our next skills development program, Honourable Members, refers to an initiative around our market access program that Shamila just reported on as part of the tourism incentive program. And the reason for that is that we want to make sure that pre and post the market access or pre and post sending people to participate in specific platforms, we make sure that they are fully prepared to go to that exhibition, and then when they come back, we get the necessary feedback from them. So that is the objective around that, and we are fully on track. Then we are also working on a investment master plan, which we are on track. With regard to the accreditation of travel companies, Honourable Chair, it relates to the recommendations from the Interministerial Committee on Immigration Regulations, where the approval or the resolution from Cabinet was that this program will be rolled out as the first phase in China, Russia, and India. The program was rolled out in the previous financial year already in those countries, and we are now looking at the next phase, at looking at next countries that we can add to this program. We have identified the countries and we've done some consultation, but we felt that we need to do a bit more consultation on the countries that we identified to make sure that indeed the program will really assist us in those countries and that they are indeed the priority countries. So we have not sent out the letters for a call for applications in the quarter under review, but it will be done before the end. The target will be met by the end of the financial year. Then around the ministerial session at the Indaba in May this year, honourable members, some of you attended that session, so just to report that it happened, and we had a quite high number of attendance at the event. Honourable Chair, just allow me to mention two major issues or areas that we are also involved in at the moment, which are not part of our plans, and that relates to the congestion at ports of entry, specifically ORT. Just to report that as an industry, we have made specific recommendations to the Department of Home Affairs, but we are also meeting not only with the Department of Home Affairs, but also with National Treasury and the Department of Public Service Administration on ways of resolving especially the financial constraints that the Department of Home Affairs are experiencing in terms of appointing staff. Secondly, we are working on the implementation of the final recommendations of the IMC on the immigration regulations, most notably the unabridged birth certificate issue. And just to report that the Immigration Advisory Board has been appointed. The department sits on that committee. The industry, through the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, presented their concerns and their recommendations to the advisory board, and all of these are being considered by them for their recommendation to the minister. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. I'm going to present on domestic tourism program 4. I need to indicate that the bulk of the budget of this program comes from the EPWP. Hence, the achievement indicating that it's pure in terms of 35% as well as the expenditure thereof. The first key performance indicator that we had to deal with was to review the domestic tourism growth strategy. In the first quarter, we expected to come up with the terms of reference, which we only managed to approve in the second quarter. But as we speak now, we have managed to do the audit. It's a question of bringing in stakeholders to be able to input into the outcomes of the audit. The second issue was to make sure that we facilitate social tourism initiatives that promote open access to selected government-owned attractions. In the first quarter, we had to facilitate young people to visit these attractions. We were able to do that in partnership with SAT. In the second quarter, we were expected to make sure that we have accessibility of our disabled people. We were able to do that during the month of September. And at the same time, for the month of the elderly, we were able to, together with SAT, to make sure that we have 110 elderly people traveling the provinces. In terms of We have indicated the dates where these travel by the elderly people have happened. It's still going to happen in the following quarter. At the same time, we are expected to continuously make sure that we get participation into the social directory. So hence we had to meet with various provincial departments so that they can allow us to put into the directory the attractions where discounted rates will be given for elderly, the youth, as well as people with disabilities. On enterprise development, we have 100 rural enterprises that we supported last year, which we need to continue to do this year. What we have done was to reassess, based on what our partner PEP did, if they still need the assistance that they requested last time. At the same time, we're able to workshop 15 enterprises through an events company that is our city, so that they will be able to access markets or be able to run events within their spaces. We expected to also launch 2 incubators. We managed to launch 1 in this quarter, which was in Gilansberg on the 28th of October. The last one will be launched in the last quarter. That will be in Mpumalanga. In skills development or capacity building programs, all in all we had 8. 4 of those capacity building programs had to get funding from the EPWP fund. Their procurement processes were delayed, but as we speak now, we are left with 1, which its advert is closing today. But most of them, we have started to recruit and make sure that we have placement. For the 2,000 youth, which are supposed to be enrolled for the training, as we speak, for Western Cape, 500 learners have been recruited, and they'll be starting the work placement this month on the 28th of November. In Gauteng, 200 learners have been recruited. Induction work still to be done. They'll be placed on the 1st of December. In Mpumalanga, 300 learners. They'll be starting on the 21st of this month. In Northern Cape, it's 100. So far, we've managed to get 50 learners. We'll be finalizing the rest, and they'll start in the coming financial year. Northwest is 200 learners, which we are still to recruit, and today we're hoping to finalize the process. For Limpopo is 200 as well to be recruited, and we'll be finalizing this on the 24th. KZN is 500. They are ready to be inducted, and they will be placed on the 25th of November. And Eastern Cape is 100 learners who will be placed on the 1st of December. In terms of the food safety, we have managed to appoint the service provider, and the recruitment and the validation of the host employer will be done in this current quarter, and placement is expected to happen in the fourth quarter. In terms of local government tourism induction program, this one was delayed in the second quarter due to the August local government election. But as we speak now, we are right on track, and we have managed to conduct workshops with Bushbuck Ridge Local Municipality, Mopani. Nkomazi is happening. It started yesterday and it's today. Zululand District Municipality was done, and Zetungau District Municipality will be done on the 29th, the 30th of November. On the tourism human resource development strategy, currently what we are doing, we shifted this with 2 months right from the beginning, and that had a little effect in terms of our timeline. What we are currently doing is to do validation workshops. We are left with 2 provinces, which are Northern Cape and Mpumalanga. and the last one will be completed on the 24th of November. And the validation workshop are composed of both public and private, so that they can look at what is, has come out of the research work. The others, the NTCE has been done and completed. In terms of the two programs that are on service excellence, that is Robben Island, Manyani, as well as he has indicated that it's Golden Gate Highlands, we have replaced that with Kukuza, and the program is on track. In terms of the to facilitate the tourism interpretation signage for the cottage was at two iconic national heritage sites. What we are waiting for is to get letters from the management authorities to indicate that the funds will be used for what they are meant for. But the MOUs have been signed by both parties. On the Blue Flag program, in the first quarter, we were supposed to identify the 50 beaches, which was done. Currently, what we have managed to do is to recruit and select 200 learners, and the program has started. In terms of the infrastructure master plan, here initially we wanted IDC to assist us on this issue, but later on we felt that DBSA was in a better position to can help us to come up with this infrastructure master plan. Currently what is happening is the SLA is being vetted from the side of DBSA. We're hoping this will also be on track. On the full-time equivalent, the annual target is 3488, and for the first quarter, our target was 523. We're able to achieve 228. For this second quarter, the target is 872. We're only able to achieve 255. Based on the comments that were already made by the DG, as well as to indicate that the bulk of the skills development programs relies on this budget, and even the FTEs will be coming out of the skills development that we are doing. We are hoping that will ease off, but we won't be able to reach the 3488 by the end of the year. At the same time, we are hoping that the GTEC process will really help us in terms of way forward to make sure that we have cleared the way to be able to implement this program without any glitches. Thank you, Chair.
The human resource issues, I dealt with them in Program 1. So let's hear from you.
Thank you, Chairperson, members. On the expenditure, we have spent 1 billion rand of our budget already, 50%. As you see, on Program 1, we've spent 100 million, 42%. There are still payments for our office accommodation as well as computer services, which is still a bit outstanding on the administration part, and that's why we're only at 42%. On policy and knowledge services, we're standing at 63%. The reason for this is in April we transferred already the marketing money to SA Tourism, and that's why our spending is quite high on policy and knowledge services. International tourism, 53%. The DG referred to the RETOSA and the UNWT payments that we've paid. The UNWTO is paid in euros, and the Retosa is paid in dollars. Domestic tourism, I think the DG also referred to the spending at this stage, which is a problem, where we only spent 18% of the budget. Specifically, this is linked to the EPWP projects. Currently, there's a lot of payments in process, and in the third quarter, it's definitely going to pick up. If we move over to the economic classifications, the compensation of employees, our spending is 49%. We've already spent 150 million of our compensation of employees budget. Goods and services. The goods and services include the EPWP training projects, and that's why your goods and services is quite low at 18%. But as I said, that will definitely pick up. If we look at transfers and subsidies, departmental agencies and accounts, that includes the payment to SA Tourism. That's quite, the percentage is quite high, 74% that we spend already. Higher education institutions, that's our payment to the five universities, and that usually gets paid in the fourth quarter. That's why it is zero at this stage. Foreign government and international organizations, there you see we've overspent with 47,000. This is linked to the exchange rate because of the UAWT and the returns of payment. On public corporations and private enterprises, this is linked to our tourism incentive projects, which the payments will also now be coming through in the third and the fourth quarter, and the spending there is only 12%. The non-profit institutions, that is linked to our SMT development, and as indicated, that is also in process of coming through. On the households, the EPWP salaries and wages, at this stage is standing at 28%. And then on our capital assets, the building and other fixed structures, this is linked to our EPWP, our infrastructure projects, and is currently at 11%. And then the payment for financial assets, where you see there's no budget, but there's an expenditure of 89,000 Rand. We can never budget for this item because it's linked to thefts and losses, and this is money that we've already written off through our departmental process. Our spending at this stage is in 50%. Thank you very much.
Honourable members, I'll open for questions to the department. But before that, before you pose your questions, I really would like to know, is the department considering reviewing the white paper on development and promotion of tourism in South Africa? And then what is the status of the department with regard in relation to paying suppliers within 30 days? How far is the BEE Charter Council with regard to their implementation plan? And what is the possible revised target for full-time equivalent? And how much expenditure is expected due to GTEC, to the GTEC processes? Honourable, if you can just write those comments or questions. Honourable members, Honourable Mashele, Honourable Masele, Honourable Force, Honourable Khaula, Honourable Trego, Honourable Kronbrook. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would want to go first to slide number 9 with regards to complaints from clients around tourism products and all those complaints that they would have. I want to request that perhaps the department, now that we are going to the festive season, to compile for all of us the 9 different provinces where clients can channel these problems or these queries or the issues or the discomfort that they would have. Because for a fact, last year, December, I had a number of calls from people in KZN who wanted to complain around tourism products and so on. And as they get frustrated and not get the relevant person, they tend to Google, find members of parliament, whoever that they can find. So that we have that list readily available, we can just send it via email to the person who's complaining around a product, a tourism product, which they are not comfortable with at that time. So that problems and challenges are also not just also stuck with us to find out that I also don't quite know who you need to call at this time of your frustration and so on. Because as much as maybe their challenges will not be resolved at that time, but because people are so sophisticated now, they would want to make a follow-up, write a letter to say, I came to this product, I was not satisfied with the service that I got, perhaps you should be looking into how best you deal with those issues. And then the second question I have goes to Program 4, which is what you call domestic tourism. I hear, ma'am, you're talking about capacity building programs that are implemented. You know, capacity can mean many things in many aspects. Perhaps can you share with us what is the exact training that this program is packaged on, so that we are able to also speak to our constituencies and say, within this municipality, this is what the department is doing. The training, because if you just say they provide training can mean many things, you know. At the end of the day, just package it to us maybe in a paragraph to say this is what is being done, this is how at this space at your local municipality or at this local municipality, this is what the department is doing around capacitating and ensuring that rural tourism is what you call built to capacity, and it benefits it becomes an economic driver around rural communities and so on. Thanks. Those are the two questions.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and the Department. I would like to commend the Department for presenting this report to us. But Honorable Chair, I'm a bit worried about Program 4 because the performance is very, very low, including the expenditure. And as the DDG has indicated here, that even by the end of the year, they might not reach all the targets that are here. What could be the causes for this program to perform this poorly? And remember, this is one of the programs that we are really depending on to be able to create the jobs that we are looking for. And this is the very same program where there was a special funding that was given to it. And how is it going to affect even the funding? Are we not going to find ourselves in future this funding not being withdrawn or not being given any extras because you are not performing on it? I'm really worried about it. So that is the one that I'm having, Honorable Chair. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Firstly, I would like just to make a few comments and then questions. Firstly, you know, tourism is not only about arrival figures. It's also about product development, small business development, marketing that could eventually turn into investment opportunities. And then for me, the most important one is human development. Much has been said about training already. So let me go straight to the point with regards to training and what we believe should be happening in this space as far as the training of tour guides is concerned. Now, the guiding profession is an important one, and we are happy to hear that there's going to be more emphasis on this going forward, specifically with reference to the three key areas: World Heritage Sites, the new entrance, and the continuous professional development. But Madam Chair, the training should be also focusing on diversifying the skills of those that are part of the program, because it could be ultimately become an incubator for product development, making sure that those products are market ready, etc. So it's not only training an individual to be a tour guide, it's actually making sure that that person adds value to the entire tourism sector by becoming ultimately a champion for the different products that are being marketed, and also to ensure that more products can actually be developed in that particular space. So we really believe that more emphasis should be placed on the multi-skilling of tour guides, and that would be part of the continuous capacity building of those that are already trained and the new entrants that you are focusing on. That's a very important aspect of training in our view. Then, Madam Chair, the policies of the department should also deal with the current discourse between tourism and poverty evaluation, because ultimately we need to make sure that through the work that we do and the policies that we adopt, that ultimately the money should trickle down to the poor. So we've spoken about rural tourism, but not enough about township tourism. And I think that should be a specific program of the department, because, you know, we need to face this challenge head on. Yes, one could package it as cultural tourism, and so the actual packaging and the branding we could talk about later on, but we need to, as a department, agree that that is an important part of the economy that we need to focus on, because there's a lot of economic opportunities in doing that, and we need to explore that so that ultimately the money will trickle down to the poor, and then we will deal with that discourse in the perception that poverty alleviation and tourism, we can bring the two together. Then, Madam Chair, the Grading Council is my next question. The Act makes provision for the Grading Council. The Director General referred to the responsibility of the Grading Council being coupled with SAT. So I would like to know what is the reasoning for putting the Grading Council with SAT. In my view, it will make sense to create a separate entity with a service level agreement, terms of reference in place to deal with grading, because we know that grading at the moment needs a full-scale review, and I believe that it makes much better sense to actually have a separate entity dealing with the South African Grading Council. We know that the grading is an important part of the work that we do. It creates quality assurance within the tourism industry, and therefore I think we need to have a discussion on that particular issue. Then, with regards to international tourism, the point was made about the unabridged birth certificate requirement that the department, together with the Department of Home Affairs, is currently looking at. Now, in our view, the use of the unabridged birth certificate to curb child trafficking is ill-conceived, because a birth certificate is not the most secure identification document. Rather, children who travel internationally should have a passport or be included in their parents' passports, because passports are made according to international standards, and birth certificates are not. So for us, that is an important part of streamlining tourist facilitation to your country by putting in measures that will have a much better effect on tourism, and therefore using the international best practices. For example, the passport for children who travel ought to include the children's details into the parents' passport is a much better way to deal with that, as currently implemented with the use of an unabridged birth certificate, which we have seen is problematic as it is. Then, Madam Chair, the Visit Information Centre, that's also been mentioned earlier on. We would like to know exactly, you know, there's been the National Information Gateway is the way that you're going, Oliver Tambo International Airport, King Shaka Airport, and a few other places. We believe that these visit information centers play an important role as part of the tourism infrastructure. So what are the plans of the department to assist municipalities with their visit information centers? Because many municipalities fund them from their own budgets, and in some cases they do not have sufficient funding to have visit information centers. So some municipalities are falling behind in that crucial tourism information network. So what is the department's plans in terms of assisting those municipalities with capacity? I'm not talking necessarily about funding, but if you can explain to municipalities the importance of having them as part of their network and how to budget it and so on. I think we mustn't just say it's a local government function. Tourism is a concurrent function, and I do believe the NDT, National Department of Tourism, should assist municipalities in that space so that all municipalities would have these visit information centres that can play an important role. I think I've dealt with most of them, Madam Chair. Yes, thank you.
Thanks, sir. Sir, thank you very much for the opportunity. I just want to check if my first reflection will be on the second quarter performance review, noting the achievement of target of 70%, but when you look at overall, you find that there is a significant drop of 4.44%, which means compared to the last quarter. I just want to check now if the department could attribute that to what exactly. Could it be staff, morale, or finances? You see, the issue of finances is important in South Africa given the state capture reports. You see, or can we refer to leadership control? You see, so if you can just get the reflection. The other point, the issue of tourism guides, I see that the appeals have been upheld. But my interest, what could they relate to? Because I'm trying to check also on the requirements. Could it be that also the stringent requirements of one to become the tour guide, could they relate to that? I have noted, DG, that you have referred to the amendments of some of the Tourism Act. Wouldn't you consider that? I'm raising, wouldn't you consider the amendment of those requirements? I'm raising this deliberately. You note that in the last presentation, we raised a strong point about the participation of taxi guys that are coming from township becoming tourist guides. And if you look at the, if you look at your requirements for tourist guide, they might not find it easy to be absorbed. Yeah, I just want to, and I'm also noting from the presentation that there is capacity building for tourist guide. I want to check when we mean entrance level, what do we mean? You see, so that we see the selection criteria and see how can we ensure that those that are having interest who may not necessarily meet your stringent criteria, how could they find expression to your capacity building, in particular those that are coming from townships and rural areas. I've seen on this on your presentation, I think it's critical, the issue of the nature of complaints. And those that are rising up are related to misleading services and refund. One, I want to check, if you look at those complaints, most of them, do they come locally or do they come internationally? I'm raising this point deliberately because the issue of refund, it's even an issue directly to some of us, because when you make an application, say for accommodation, and you do the online payment, if for some reason you decide later that, no, I'm not supposed to go to that area, I'm supposed to go to the other area, you'll find that you are unable to get your fund. You are told later from online that, no, no, in fact, there's 100% non-refund, something like that. So I want to believe that it could be related to that. But I'm asking you so that you indicate exactly, because it should be having a direct impact to your service. And what is it that you guys are doing? Because it's a cause of concern, especially on service misleading and refund. If I can just get your... The vacancy rate, we're talking about percentage. I would like to know if we can refer to actualities in terms of numbers and the categories of employment when we talk about vacancy rates. Which categories are we referring to, and against what number are we talking about when we talk about the vacancy rate in the department? You'll understand that you are dealing with elected people here, so you have to be very clear. The women representation is good. I see that you guys are missing. I'm meeting your target, but even there, one is curious against what number. When you talk about out of 100, what are we talking about? Yeah, if we can get that. I don't know, deliberately, DG, you skipped the part that deals with the workplace skills plan implementation, where you talk about 30% implementation, first quarter, 30% implementation, second quarter. I was curious, because in my view, most companies or most departments, they use workplace skills plan as their vehicle to advance their employment equity targets. Noting your reflection on women targets and your reflection on disability, but one would have wanted to hear exactly, you see, your workplace skills plan implementation, especially because normally your workplace skills plan will talk to your ordinary training that the employer will do, which could relate to soft skills. But when you talk about workplace skills plan as well, you should talk about your pivotal plan, which will then talk to your priority skills areas and which category we'll be talking about when we talk about your pivotal. Because when you talk about skills development, the key thing is the priority skills, which in my view will be reflected to your pivotal plan. So if I can find your reflection there. The labor relations, I've noted your reflection on it, but my curiosity on the disputes, the nature of disputes, but also the level, the categories. Are we talking about your most vulnerable employees that are found your most vulnerable, obviously your lowest staff, or are we talking about just the senior staff here? What categories are we referring to when we talk about my last point, Chef? You see, so if the DG can just indicate there, so that we see if those employees at some point need representation from EFF. The enterprise development, ma'am, you have referred to enterprise development, hundreds. My curiosity is that, you see, every time you get these huge numbers, the first thing, because remember, we're coming from different constituencies, coming from different provinces. So one is curious to know in terms of the demographics of our own provinces, the demographics, if at least we can get an indication, so that we can see that in Northwest is zero, in Eastern Cape is zero, and those numbers are coming from Western Cape and Gauteng only. You see, the capacity building programs, which you have referred, 500 from Western Cape, 200, and then you went through. My question there is, what NQF levels that are we referring to here? And secondly, as we refer to, and whether this program is a startup program or is a resumption or continuation from a particular program. And if it's a startup, if it's a continuation program, it continues from which level going forward? I think those that, to me, are important. Thank you very much. I might come back.
If you get the opportunity, if I do.
Good morning, everyone. Hey, when I'm Kayawa, we don't identify ourselves here. Morning, Chair. I'm talking to this one who's identifying herself as a political party member. What tourism here? Yeah. He's not. Chairperson, let me appreciate the report and also appreciate the fact that the 80% women representation in a management level, at least it means you are taking women somewhere. Coming back to what was said by the chair, we cannot overemphasize the payment of service providers within the prescribed period. We are making a plea with you, department. If you look back at slide 5 of the presentation, there's that slice, there's that cake pie that is there, with a 17.5% in red. When I was analyzing that pie and reading the document, it means the biggest contributor in the red is domestic tourism, which means we must have a strategy to turn the situation that reflects there. Because domestic tourism is very much close to my heart, and also talk about local, and I believe in the local content. In the chair, there was a mention of youth hospitality service training that is targeting youth, where there's already 1,000 youth recruited already. I am interested in knowing how do you drive this recruitment? Do you drive it through an advert, open advert, or do you target university or FET college students that need that in-service training for qualification? How do you do it? Because I am worried that it's only 1,000 that is already recruited, and there's high unemployment out there, and the program must cover all provinces. We cannot overemphasize that. And also the issue that promotes domestic tourism targeting youth, I think that we must work hand in hand with the Department of Education, and if your target is elderly people, there are those that are organized there in old age homes and whatever, at least the Department of Social Care. We must first mobilize them so that they are, when we need them, they are readily available. The other issue that I am interested in is this issue of, how will I put it, Chair? Is this issue of, or maybe let me put it this way, are there any policy gaps identified under domestic tourism that put us in this situation so that we are able to know them? It means we must get closer and deeper into the issue. The last point was the point that was asked by Honorable Masihele to say there was that 100 million. Am I correct to say it was shifted from Program 4 to Program 2? Am I correct to say that 100 million? I think there was a mention in last financial that's been shifted from Program 4 to Program 2. I'm not sure whether my mind is serving me well on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. The few things I'd like to take up on this report. First one's on page 17, okay? It talks about in the KPI representation for people with disabilities and black representation. Now, I took from that what the department is arguing for is representativity. That's probably why they use the word representation. Now, we've got a figure there in this particular case for black representation of 91.5 and actual performance 95.1. Now, I mean, I'm not a person who actually believes in quotas and numbers. I think we should actually always employ the best person for the job, and the talent that is widespread in our country will make sure it will end up more or less like our average South African population. So I trust South Africans and I trust our people. But if you're going to have a target, then, or a quota, whatever this actually is, and if it's based on representativity, then what is the representativity based on? Is it a national demographic, in which case it doesn't actually add up to, for example, the same demographic on the voters' roll, or indeed on the population register? So I'm not exactly sure where these figures come from and why the target is what it is. Then if you go to pages 67 and 68, it's inevitable, I suppose, that with our history we have to still classify people in terms of race, and indeed we all support transformation, so it needn't be a bad thing. But when I look at these figures, employees for occupational bans, one gets a completely different number. It's nothing like the figure on page 17, and over the next page, the figure is 85.8, whereas it was 95 on page 17. So perhaps the figure on page 17 is only senior management, or somewhere right up there. But then if you go back again to the previous page and look at top management and senior management, that particular statistic is 25 out of 68, so that doesn't tie up. So I'd just like some clarity as to what the actual figure is and why the target or quota or goal, whatever it is, has been set to that level. What does it tie back to? What are we actually striving for? So we know where we're going on this. It's also interesting that you talk about people with disabilities, and there's 24% of that. And there's also 24 white people. So I hope this is a coincidence that not every single person who's disabled is from the same demographic. I take it is just a coincidence. Okay, then on page 65, there's a reference to the number of jobs to be created by the SRI program, which we know a lot about now, and the actual performance. I take it that the reasons for variances are valid. But what I'm more interested in, and it's the point I want to make in my last point coming up next, it's one thing measuring an output. So I have a target, and we tick the boxes, and we actually then do what we're supposed to do. Nowhere in this report do I actually get a qualitative feeling. We had to do four interventions, we did four interventions. We had to employ so many people, we employed so many people. I don't get the sense as to the sustainability of this. So in this particular case, we've got 255 full-time equivalent jobs created through the SI program. Would those people, for example, would some of them be working at that last tourist resort we saw in Mpumalanga in our oversight visit? Because if they are, they're not real jobs. They're jobs that are actually being created by a massive cash drain pumped into a project which is losing millions of rands every year. I would like to get the sense that those FTE jobs are actually sustainable, and that they will actually continue in the absence of any departmental budget purchasing up those jobs. And I don't get that impression from this report. I don't know how much of these are simply jobs that are paid for every year by the taxpayers in order to meet a target and tick a box and have a nice glossy to present it to the committee, or to what extent it's now been taken over by the private sector and it runs as a standalone, on their own two feet, commercial enterprise, which means we can free up those funds to increase opportunities somewhere else. And then on that vein, or in that vein, my last point, Chair, pages 50 to 53, just as an example, it's right through this report, the quantitative things that are rolled out without any feel about how real they are. So on page 50, we've got 100 enterprises supported for development. Okay. What one would really like to see another page on that particular slide 50 saying, of those 100 enterprises, how many are still successful? Are they actually running on their own now? Once you've given them a bit of a help up, hopefully it's a help up rather than a hand out, are they now able to take the process forward and continue under their own
self-esteem and under their own capacity to operate? Or do we just help 100 enterprises and now the help is finished and maybe they've regressed and maybe we need to help them again? I'd like to get a feel as to the permanence of the self we're getting. On page 51 we talk about the chefs. Okay. 577 trainees for the chef training program. Okay. Do all these chefs have full-time jobs now? Are they all working in hotels or places where they're earning their keep, where they're making a contribution? How many of them are still working? It's kind of feel that I'd like to have. Page 52, 2,000 youths enrolled in the hospitality service training program. Okay, so in a program, what happened to them after that? We spent this money enrolling them. Are they now gainfully employed? Are they making a contribution to building the economy on a permanent and sustainable basis? And then lastly on page 53, the food safety program. I'm not entirely sure what the actual entity is that locates these people, but again, I'd like the same reassurance. So my plea is a more general one. And that is, I mean, I appreciate, and I've always said it, a record for 10 years on this committee saying it, quality reports we get from the department and SAT are superb. By and large, they're very good, and it's a pleasure to actually have those people to appear before this committee because they know their pitch, and they actually know exactly what they're doing. But I mean, I would just ask that in and over above the presentations that they make to us, that we have some idea of whether, in fact, these things really have an economic benefit, whether they continue, whether they are now self-sustaining, and not just we were asked to train 577 chefs, and we trained 577 chefs. It's got to be a little bit more than that. So we could maybe change the emphasis in the future and build on the excellent work that we know the department and SAT do. As two examples. I think I would appreciate that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you to all the members. So, department, you must know your story. Get the pattern from SAT and know your story. I can't agree more with whatever everybody has said, but just to add a last word on the questions, we've done our oversight visits to various sites in various provinces. We came across the museum guides. What is it that the department has done to assist the museum guides to do their work properly and effectively, or to help the provinces with regard to training those museum guides? For instance, we went to KwaZulu-Natal in Ngome Blood River. Yeah, the tourist guides there. But the worst one was the Freedom Park. This was something else. I wonder if the department has been taken through by the tourist guide at Freedom Park in particular. I'm emphasizing on Freedom Park because it's a national one, and in a way, it attracts a lot of international tourists. And we went to Northwest Pinanis Bay. There was a tourist guide who was just on top of things. So what is the department doing in order to intervene in the tour guides in the museum in particular? Thank you very much, DG and your team. And actually, before you begin, we are very concerned about domestic tourism because some countries in Africa have grown their economies and their GDP through domestic tourism. Are we going to do likewise, or we're going to go down with it? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will come in last. I think I'm going to give to the colleagues. I'll start with the CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the question of the 50-day payments, the department submits reports to National Treasury on or before the 7th of every month pertaining to the previous month's expenditure. So any late payment, we pay an invoice after 30 days, we've got a report to National Treasury, and ultimately those reports then also, I think, from National Treasury comes to Parliament. I can say that for the report that we submitted on the 7th of October, for September. It was a zero report. There was no late outstanding payments. But for the one that we submitted on the 7th of November, there was one payment which was over 30 days and for the amount of just over 4,000 Rand. And it was paid, I think, on day 32, but it was due to an internal process, and we are taking disciplinary action at this stage. On the question related to the HR percentage on, if you look at page 68, just to say that if you add the Africans, the colors, and the Indians, it gives you 470, and if you take 470 and you divide it by 494, it gives you the 95.1% as stated on the performance slide. Thank you.
Perhaps, thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to make a comment on the unenriched birth certificate, it's noted. Thank you, Honourable Foss. Just to indicate as well that one of the resolutions of the INC was the inclusion of parental details in a child's passport, and Home Affairs indicated that that will be done before the end of this financial year. So it is in process.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I want to start with the policy question of the white paper. We have, in fact, reviewed the contents of the white paper in order to inform the legal process, the legal review process. The white paper is fairly extraordinary because 20 years down the line, there are pretty much most of the areas we could have thought of many moons ago were in fact considered in the white paper. Even though some of the language is a little bit outdated, we talk about computer technology in the white paper and we know that we've moved forward in language. But the white paper actually was a fairly extraordinary document. The issues that weren't covered extensively in the white paper were issues of transformation, specifically in the way that they are currently covered at the moment. And in reality, we have covered transformation issues with the codes as well as legislation related to transformation. The second issue that is not covered very extensively and they couldn't have anticipated are the issues related to the sharing economy. So issues like Airbnb and Uber, I think all those many years ago, they could not have anticipated what would become and of those specific areas and how they would actually impact on our sector specifically. But by far and large, all of the policy issues that we're currently dealing with in the tourism sector are still covered by that white paper. And I say it's extraordinary because those of us who've worked in that policy space are in deep admiration of the people who more than 20 years ago actually, you know, thought about and covered all of the issues, imagining how the world has changed in the last 20 years. So we have, in fact, reviewed the white paper against what is currently in the policy space. We have not decided to go the route of promulgating a new white paper, precisely because the gaps that we've identified in our review process are already covered by other pieces of legislation and or regulations. So there isn't necessarily a need for us to, at this stage, go the route of publishing and promulgating a new white paper. With regard to tour guides, I think that in the specific briefing that we did to the committee a few months ago on tour guides, we are in 100% agreement that tour guides are, in fact, the face of tourism. And in many instances, do not necessarily have the correct skills that allow them to interpret the South African story and tell it in a way that maximizes the exposure that they have. That being said, I think that the department has been involved in a few processes. So one of the things that is commonly misunderstood about tour guiding is that you have to be registered as a tour guide only if you are actually paid for your services. The reality of it is that the legislation is very clear. If you perform guiding of any kind, whether you are remunerated or not, you actually do have to be registered. So that's the one kind of misperception around tour guiding. You are registered for the following reason. Firstly, in order to ensure that you receive the proper training, because you perform such an important function of being the face of the country and telling a uniquely South African story. The second reason that you need to be registered is so that if you have a bad experience with the guide, there can be recourse. So you can actually report someone with whom you had a very negative experience, and we can actually deal with it, whether it is a question of not having provided the correct information, whether it is a question of them actually have provided a poor service, or whether there is a question of deliberately misleading a client. So that's the reason for registration. And the reason that we take guiding so seriously is precisely because these are people who are critically important to our sector and tell a unique story. So in that, we have, of course, discovered that it's not just about interpretation and telling the story of a site or of a country that's important. Guides have also actually need to be trained on business skills, on the skills that actually relate to confidence, to presentation skills. And we have in our kind of interventions and discussions around the form of that training looked at those issues, because it is correct. They do provide it provides an entry into the tourism market, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they will remain there. So in all of those issues, we are looking at how we provide those skills apart from the training that is specifically related to the site interpretation itself, and that is part of the thinking around continuous professional development. The issue around guiding is not that it is, the requirements are not onerous. You need to have been trained in order for us to certify that you are competent to tell the story of whichever site or whichever province you are actually telling the story about. So it's not an onerous, impossible entry kind of level into the sector that inhibits new entrants. When we talk about new entrants, we're specifically speaking about people who have never guided before. Therefore, that means that they've never received formal training on it and they're not actually registered. So new entrants are people who are entering the guiding profession. And we're concerned both about increasing the number of new entrants, but we're also concerned about making sure that those guides who are currently there are in fact very well trained and very well skilled. We work very closely with our provinces and the registrars in each of those provinces, because each province and each site has its own unique challenges around guiding. There are, I have to say, some very excellent guides in South Africa, and they are excellent ambassadors for the country as well as our sector. So the whole issue of guiding, I think we did do an extensive presentation to the portfolio committee on the issues and the challenges and some of the work that we're doing. I think that in that we also explained that we were not necessarily the people that were responsible for the training programs, because that is something that CACITA actually manages. But we work very closely to inform what goes into the content of that training program and to look at the whole issue of professionalization of guides. With relation to the VICs, I think at a previous portfolio committee, I reported that we have 245 VICs across the country. That's a large number. And we also understand their critical importance as a face-to-face interface for visitors. There are two things that the department has actually done to try to assist, because we can't be at all 245. So the first thing is that there is a very detailed framework around what a VIC should be, It speaks to both its physical experience, so in terms of its branding, what kind of look and feel it should have. And the second thing it speaks to is to the capacity of the staff, the training, and what they need to actually do that. But the department's also gone a step further and worked with a tertiary institution to develop a specific training program for staff that are based at visitor information centers. So this actually deals with the issue of how you deal with the interface with staff. And we have, that training program is of course in place. It is, it actually is NQF rated. And we have now progressively worked with municipalities to try to put through staff who are at those specific VICs actually dealing onto the training program so that we're working with municipalities to actually work on the on this function. The issue of VICs is that we do have to move forward from 245. So it's a hard conversation because not all visitor information centers run optimally. Also, not all visitor information centers might necessarily be required. And so the mobile app that we're developing around visitor information centers is partly to try to work around the gap. Because what we are hoping is that in our discussions, as we have them with provinces, there does need to be a rationalization of the number of visitor information centers because of the costs involved in running them. They are quite expensive to run because staffing capacity for VICs runs differently to the way you would operate a normal office. So the VICs we have at the airport, for example, run from 6 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night. That usually means that at an operational level, you have to have two shifts of staff that work there. You also then have to have, because they are far away from where central offices are, you actually also have to have staff that goes and manages and oversees the function periodically. And if there are challenges at those VICs, you need to have people who are able to deal with those challenges immediately. So I think in line with the thinking around how operations at VICs work, we are working very closely with provinces to look at a meaningful model that allows us to have a balance between face-to-face interface, which is what the VICs have, and also the ability for those travelers, millennials in many ways, who access information using technology to be able to access that information in that way. I think that that model around VICs actually will work much better. At the department, as we have said previously, we've prioritized working on national tourism information gateways because those are access points into the country. But we haven't actually neglected those that are at local municipality levels and elsewhere in the province, and we're trying to address those specific gaps related to that. With regard to the museum guides and specific training, I think that I will double check this. We have worked specifically on World Heritage Sites as a way to prioritize, but I think that our next level of working is actually to work with sites that have of national significance, like the Freedom Park, so that we extend our World Heritage Sites program on guide training to actually those sites that have national significance. For the reason that they are actually also about selling our country.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of capacity building, what are the areas that you are packaging to capacitate the various municipalities? We avoid the word training because training would bring in the people accredited who are delivering this. So hence we use the word capacity building. And our approach is to go into the area, find out from those who are going to be capacitated, what are the areas they would like to be capacitated on. I'll give you an example of a bushbuck ridge which we started with right at the beginning. When we went into the area, the focus areas which they wanted us to help them on, first of all, was the issue of support in terms of local government for tourism. COPTA had to come into the space. Update on the land lanes. We had to bring in rural development, municipal rezoning, the guiding registration process, support for SMMEs. Within that space, we had to also bring in CEDA, we had to bring in, then we had TEP, we had to bring in IDC, Anglo-American also joined us. What was good is that the recommendations that came out of that process, the Bushbuck Ridge municipality were able. The recommendations that came out of the capacity building process, the Bushbuck Ridge municipality were able to take them forward. For starters, they didn't have a tourism officer. They made sure that they come up with a tourism officer. They also didn't have a local tourism organization within that space. They were able to come up with the authority. And for us, that was a plus because it helps us to have a better coordination when it comes to the things that we want to push forward within the spaces. We're hoping with the others that we are working on, we'll be able to say, out of the process, these are the achievements that you have come upon. And the forum is now being chaired by the MEC. We were requested to facilitate the first meeting, which we did last year. On the enterprise development, I'll start first to indicate that the 100 rural enterprises that we are referring to are the ones that we had last year. What we did was to check in terms of the various provinces. I don't have the space now, but what I remember, there was a low intake from the northwest as well as Northern Cape. But the rest of the municipalities, Gauteng as well, I think it had only one enterprise. And we're hoping with the incubator, we'll be able to, within that area, to have within the value chain of tourism, to give support to the various enterprises in terms of what they will be needing. We're also not going to supply whatever that we want to capacitate them on, but we need to find out from them what are the areas they would like to be supported. For our skills development training program, starting first with the chef, the 577 that we are having, last year it was 377, and now they've moved into the second level. We added 204 as the new entrance. They will be trained in terms of professional cookery to ensure that they become placed properly within the hospitality establishment. It's across the country. We have schools that are doing this for us, but this program is managed by our South African Chef Association. I have the numbers in terms of how many learners across the country and in which schools are they placed. In terms of the recruitment thereof, that will differ from the type of training. For example, for the food safety, we go for unemployed graduates, tourism graduates, who will serve as mentors. And at the same time, we go for students within the FTEs who are doing tourism or any related food safety subject within their space. This one is a little bit targeted. On the bodies, We place an advert, but we make sure that the municipalities also do participate because they do have the indigent register.
which can help in to help us to really deal with the aggregation of poverty. The NQF for the chef, it will be a diploma, and if you go up, it will depend whether you want to do pastry or you want to do the culinary side of things. On the blue flag, the training is on an NQF-5, dealing on environmental issues, and all in all, the credits are 122. And in this instance, for the blue flag, it's only 3 coastal provinces that are affected. Okay, the other issue is that 70% of their time on the skills development is to ensure that they get the actual practical training, and 30% is only for theory. For example, the chefs, they go to class once a week, and the rest of the days they must be placed within an institution. On the SRI, the number of FTEs that we hope to achieve based on what is happening now. When we did the analysis, the budget is composed of the incentive plus the normal budget. All in all, it's 277 million. For the incentive, which is 61, 38% will be spent. And for the rest of the budget, you are hoping that will reach up to 70%. And the number that you are estimating at the end of the financial year is 1,338. We are hoping that this might even change for the better if our turnaround strategy that we are putting on the table will really bear fruit. On the sustainability of these training projects that you are dealing with, for the chef program, we have an absorption rate of 60%. And on the others, especially the bodies, it's still a bit of a problem. On the food safety, yes. Basically, this is one of those programs where the industry is saying this has come at an opportune time. So with the pilot that we did of the 300, the absorption rate was above 70%. But as Honorable Kronborg said, I think we need to have an evaluation of these programs to see how sustainable are they, where are these young people that we have trained. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I will try and respond to some of the questions that the colleagues did in touch.
When the deed is completed, then I'll just thank you.
The first one relates to I'll start with our work skills, workplace skills plan, and what are these areas that we are training people on. It's informed by the needs of the organization. A significant gap that we have picked up, which also relates to the performance of the EPWP and so on, was contract management. So that's a very significant part of the training that we're doing. We're also doing training in relation to risk management, because that it tells us that there were the ability to actually identify and manage risks, particularly at levels lower than management, was a bit of a challenge. We are also dealing with planning capacity, and planning capacity has by and large contributed to most of what we discussed last week with regards to EPWP. It was largely problems of planning and contract management and project management of large scale. So those are areas that the interventions are largely focused on. We also perhaps whilst I'm still on these HR-related issues, we do take note of the point that Honorable Krumbok made with regards to the principle of representativity. And this is an issue that we talk about even internally. The 91.5% is in accordance with the Employment Equity Act. Black in this case, like CFO said, is Africans, Indians, and colors. So that target comes from there. We do experience challenges, and I want to state this. We do experience challenges when it comes to recruitment of white people at lower levels. So these will be levels like cleaners, ancillary services, and so on. So there we have got a little bit of a challenge. At management level and at middle management level, we don't have much of a challenge with regards to that. So those are issues that we discuss. We put them on top management agenda. We put them on Manco agenda. We are mindful of representativity as a principle that we are actually supposed to adhere to. The question that whether we are going to have an under-expenditure and what would that under-expenditure be associated with the GTEC process. Honorable Chairperson, not necessarily. The reason for that is because not meeting these targets relates to, for a job to count as one FTE, it means one has been in the job for a period equivalent to a year. But when it talks to issues of material that has to be bought and so on, that would still be taken care of by that same money. So there's a little bit of a difference between the number of jobs on the side that would be. So the time that the work started makes a huge contributing factor with regards to that. So if you start from 1st of April and you move on until the end of the financial year and the person was in that job, then certainly you would be able to count that as a full-time equivalent job and you would have it. But if you start in the middle of the year, you would still require the same material and so on and so forth. So a small amount that would then be associated with the actual stipends might then be a factor, but not necessarily what is associated with the material that would have to be bought. So if you go to the classroom and you're doing one of these trainings, you would still require the same textbook. You would still, so it's that kind of balance. So it's not like something that we would see some gross under expenditure within the program necessarily. It's because these things are coming at a later stage, but they're actually then going to pick up. The GTEC process would then kick in terms of implementation in the coming financial year. Then the next issue, I've talked to this a little bit, which is associated largely, Chairperson, with what you see as the concerning performance that you stated with regards to the program four. I do want to indicate that part of the evaluation internally, as we are going through these things, we do pick up that program four is heavily loaded compared to the other programs in terms of the weight of the things that are dealt with within that particular program. So that's something that we are also mindful of. And we are trying to see how best internally we could provide for the necessary resources to be able to carry certain things. So because it's the same problem that if we are talking about EPWP, it's almost a program on its own in its entirety. Enterprise development, it's almost a program on its own. So these are really very significant things, and we are reflecting on that, and I have had discussions with the DDGs about this, so that we are able to try and create a sense of balance. Even before the end of the year, we need to create that sense of balance, so that in the end, I do not come after the DDG and say, where are we with this, where are we with that? So we need to try and be able to balance that allocation, and that's part of what we are working on now. So we should be able to provide a different report to you when we come back for the third quarter report in terms of the changes that would have happened in that regard. The issues pertaining to the complaints officer, we will take that suggestion in terms of making sure that the information is readily available. But I think it also talks to our awareness-raising mechanisms within that particular space, so that people have this information as ready as possible. Not only the complaints officer, but also if we consider partnerships with industry, they've got hotlines on the other side, and so all those things could be even small cut that people can pick up as they visit attractions and so on and so forth, or even when they visit the grading council. Why is the grading council where it is currently? The legal provision, current legal provision, says the minister may assign the responsibility to any organ of state. So that assignment was done to SAT. By and large, this is a resources issue. So what we're trying to avoid was, at this point in time, with the grading council, and it's a very small complement, very, very small, because they work on the basis of graders that are outside the SAT domain. It would have had to set up its own IT systems, its own financial systems, HR systems, and so on and so forth. And that would have taken a bulk of their very small budget, and the actual budget to do work would not have been there. So it's really an administrative home to make sure that it has a place where it can share the burden of costs of the caring, the establishment, and so on, with South African Tourism. But the committee that deals with that is appointed by the minister, so they are able to do their work in terms of overseeing the work, the actual work of the SAT as such, of the grading council as such. The issues pertaining to, I think DJ Malan tried to explain some of these issues pertaining to the facilitation, travel facilitation related issues, the birth certificates and so on and so forth. What our position has been, Honorable Chairperson, is that the spirit and letter of the cabinet decision should be implemented. So what has been stated there in terms of the advisory issues and so on in that particular decision is what we would like to see implemented in terms of the processes that she alluded to. The other issues, the people that either are going through a disciplinary process or their disciplinary cases have already been concluded, some are at entry level, some are at middle management level, but we don't look at that. We look at the nature of the transgression, and we follow the due process of investigating. We charge on the basis of the outcomes of the investigation, and when the disciplinary process has been concluded, my responsibility as accounting officer is solely to implement the decision of the presiding officer in terms of the sanction as his. Others would then have taken a decision to appeal because Minister is the appeals authority, and Minister would then make a decision in that regard, and he has upheld the decisions of the presiding officers in this regard. So we whether it's management, we have made our labor relations mechanism very independent to the point that whether it is a manager that somebody is complaining about, that staff member would feel free to be able to go there to that mechanism, lodge their case, and make sure that it is heard freely and fairly and with no interference whatsoever. So that, and we want to maintain the integrity of that because that's the only basis of a sense of discipline in the organization, but also in terms of the integrity of the system itself, it assists us to make sure that there's labor peace. So we are able to maintain our labor peace because of that level of integrity, and we've said we want to keep it exactly like that. $100 million, I think, Honourable Chairperson, this relates to the domestic tourism $100 million that is appropriated to South African tourism. Yeah. And whether what we're doing is economic benefit. Well, we're doing this as we do believe that there is, but of course, we also, as we reported last week, we do believe that we can do better. But by and large, even the people that we are training and exposing to the workplace for a particular duration, our view is that with all the projections that are made in terms of the potential growth of tourism in the future, and the demands that are going to be there in the future, it is so important that we need not only provide for today, but in future, that capacity must actually exist. And that's why we actually find ourselves in that particular space. And it happens with all other sectors. So you would find that there's continuation of training of teachers, training of nurses. It's not everybody who is necessarily going to end up being absorbed by the labor market. There are imperfections within the labor market, and that is why we believe that as a result of what we are doing, it does make a contribution. And we without necessarily having gone through an evaluation, as the leader said, we are comfortable that we do see some of these people actually being absorbed in some of these areas. And those who also want to venture beyond just being employed and actually get into activities of entrepreneurship. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Kronbrook has got a follow-up, and I think Honourable Maseda has got a follow-up. Yeah, Honourable Forster has got a follow-up. And before they said they are following up, in your capacity building, do you mean in-service training or, yeah, is it part of in-service training or continuing education? And as you are looking at SRI, Extended Public Works, EPWP project, is that the beginning? Or we are looking at it as restructuring the program or restructuring the programs? Honourable Kronbrook.
Thanks so much, Chair. Just 2 points. As I said in my first round of questions, I'm really, really uncomfortable about being counting people on the basis of the colour of their skin. So, you know, I say this with that caveat because I find it uncomfortable as a Liberal Democrat to do this at all. But we have got a slide and we have got a presentation in front of us, and that's been part of the discussion today, and we must engage. So I'd like to thank the DG. That explanation now makes the numbers add up perfectly, which is good for any accountant, and I totally get why the numbers, in fact, are reconcilable. But that led me then to ask another question, because if, in fact, we're defining Africans, colors, and Indians as black and a catch-all in terms of the Employment Equity Act, as he said. Is it then his interpretation and the practice of the department then not to worry too much about the numbers within that black definition? So, I mean, for example, my understanding is, and I hate to use the term, but colored people make up 11% of the South African population. So our black target, broadly defined, has been at least 91.5, has been met. We can see that. But if you look at that, colors are underrepresented by half. If you're looking at that particular community as a demographic with its own target. So what I take from his answer is that it doesn't really matter what percentage colored Africans and Indians are within that broad definition of black, as long as it comes to 91.5. And then I'm starting to ask myself, well then, what actually happens in the Western Cape and the Northern Cape? So that's a problem when you have these numbers and a de facto quota, because do you apply it nationally? Do you apply it provincially? Do some demographics or some communities get underrepresented because they're included in a more aggregated figure, which means they might not have, in inverted commas, the correct representativity because they're part of a bigger group that does have sufficient, or in this case, slightly more than the required or desired representativity. So could you just explain how that works out in practice? I'd like to understand how the department goes ahead and does things. And my second point, second question is, thank you very much for the undertaking by the other presenter that we do need, in fact, have to look at sustainability when we look at meeting these targets. And I want to ask through you, Chairperson, that can we actually make that a definite decision, a resolution of the committee? When we have the department here again next time, can they append at the end of each slide where they present in this type of format, even if it's just a couple of paragraphs, an assessment as to the long-term sustainability of these targets, particularly when they involve placing people or training people or inducting people into programs, what actually happened to those people? Are they gainfully employed? Are they employed in self-sustaining projects which don't involve financial assistance from the state? That would, I think, put a lot of minds at rest on the theme that we've pursued in this committee for a number of years now, is that are we actually getting sustainable value for money out of this? And if they have suggested they're going to do that, it shouldn't be difficult for us as the committee to say, please, we now require you to do that. And that's what I'd like you, through you, to ask them to do.
Actually, the two people around me are diligently writing your suggestion.
Fantastic.
Honourable said, thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I just have two issues to raise. On page or slide 52, as the DDG was presenting, she added on the recruitment selection. She added other provinces, but I think I missed one, or maybe it was not mentioned, the Free State one. I don't have it here as to whether how many are there in the Free State. Secondly, Honourable Chair, I want to congratulate the department for having received an award from the AG, which is very, very good, and also for our DG to have also been given an award for being the best DG in the country. We thank you so much. We hope even the DDGs here will copy from him and also be the best DDGs in the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two issues as well. Firstly, with regards to the Grading Council, I listened very carefully to the explanation given in terms of the rationale to place the SA Grading Council in the administrative home, as the DG said, with SAT. But if you look at the terms of reference of SAT, it's mainly to focus on domestic and international marketing. That is the main focus of SA Tourism. And I'm concerned that perhaps by placing the SA Grading Council under the SAT umbrella, it might lose its purpose altogether, because we must not underestimate the value of the South African Grading Council insofar as providing quality assurance within the tourism industry. And much has been said in the past by members of this committee and officials from the Department of Tourism to do more in that space, to get many more establishments, whether it's hotels, bed and breakfasts, guest houses, and we even said that we should extend it further to lodges, taverns, cultural villages, etc. To get those facilities graded will provide many more benefits within the tourism industry, incentives, etc., etc., to those places, and that will also add to the importance of quality assurance to ensure that we protect our travel brand. And I do believe, yes, there's a financial consideration should you go and place it somewhere else, but then in the future, when SAT presents their overview or quarterly reports, they should start with the Grading Council, so that we create more prominence from within to the workings of the Grading Council. It's always at the end, and it's always a matter of, yes, they met a few targets, they missed a few targets, but it's fine, because we've come to the end of the presentation by that time. I really believe that we as a department should do much more to create prominence for the South African Grading Council and to actually go and unpack the value of graded establishment, the incentives, etc. And I think that's the point I'm making. So I wasn't pushing for it to be separate. I was really asking what was the rationale. But then I think as a department, you need to look at your service level agreement with SAT to make sure that they adhere to those requirements and those conditions set out in the service level agreement, so that we do much more in that particular space. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And before the DG responds, I think that that rests with us, that we could just ask SAT to have the Grading Council reporting first. It rests with us.
No,
not with the department, but we'll do it. We'll do it. And also, I think the issue of Grading Council needs a lot of rethinking. And I think this time we may even want the principal to come around and tell us of his rethinking of the Grading Council and its whole. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Jefferson. I will not go then into Grading Council. I think that covers it, the policy issues as well as the other issues. Thank you. In terms of the issues pertaining to demographics, I want to just reiterate that we are all for representativity, and we try everything we can to really get to levels of representativity as per the Employment Equity Act. What we do, we advertise posts, and as we advertise these posts, and honorable members would know that at some point there were some challenges about how explicit you become in the advert and so on and so forth. So we advertise the posts. We get applications for those posts. It really has been challenging to, particularly in areas where provincial demographics are acceptable. In a typical case of Northern Cape as well as Western Cape, provincial demographics would have more colored people than other groups. And in those instances, you would recall there was a case associated with the Department of Correctional Services, and that particular case led to full recognition of provincial demographics, and that's why you would see those provincial demographics actually manifesting in those particular provinces. We solely work on the basis of the national demographics as a national department. So that kicks in as well. But in terms of the issue that Honorable Kumbuk raised, how do we then go about getting people? When opportunities do not necessarily represent potential for people to be getting promotions, going international. It's unlikely for most of those people to actually leave potential for growth within the province and go and take up, in some instances, a lower level job. So when you go to the levels of management, we don't have any issues there. We are fine. But when you go to the lower levels, that's where you start finding those challenges. And it's really a huge struggle to overcome. But it's something that we are fairly mindful of. And I am personally on record as well, even in our management meetings, in our outreach with staff, that representativity means representativity, and it should be in that particular way. In terms of the sustainability issues, I do want to submit that our focus with regards to sustainability, the issues that Shamila was talking to, it is pretty much on the issues around the infrastructure type of work, because there we have a degree of control. But we don't have much control when it comes to labor market factors. So if our sustainability in training would be, if this person is now gone to a point where they become a professional chef, what happens to them after that is the labor market issues. And that's something that we would really plead with the members, that we take that into account, so that in the end we don't create an impression that we if for every person trained there will be a job that person is going to get, which is really not likely, regardless of which sector, tourism or not tourism, it is not really likely. Pastor Mama, I think you will respond to Honourable Mercedes.
Thank you, Chair. The Chair wanted to find out, is it an in-service training when we do this capacity building program workshops? It's more of information sharing, because within the space we have traditional leaders, we have councillors as well as officials from the municipality and from other spaces. It's more of a relationship building in terms of ensuring that within the space, various parties need to understand what would be their role and responsibility to make sure that we move together positively when it comes to tourism-related issues. On the number of bodies within the Free State province, it's 100. It's the same number as the Eastern Cape. Those were the two. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think, DGs, at the meeting of the DGs, I'm not sure whether you meet even with the municipal managers, so as a way of beginning to understand or to get information around demographics in provinces or in the area of tourism, so that we just have something like overall. And maybe also the people that you send in for training, if there could be some communication with TBCSA and other private sector organizations that deal with that deal with related issues, with the most. Today there is no backbencher. The backbencher is, Honourable Kronborg.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Chair. I just wanted you to note that
I said what I wanted to.
Oh, all right. I just wanted to point out that there's only two committee members left at the meeting now, and they're both from the Democratic Alliance, and we'd like to table a resolution involving committee capture. Is that all right?
That one I didn't hear. But I'd like to thank you all, Honourable Members, because even those that have left have really managed to sit for quite some time. Most of them have got a problem of transport home. And I would like to thank the department. This was a bit better than previous. I hope with the third quarter report we'll get something even better. On that note, thank you very much. Thank you very much to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.